All right, everybody. Welcome to We Are the Coach Squad. This is episode 7, and this is your coach, Jim Johnson, and I'm with my buddy, as always, Coach Jared Fell. What's up, my man?
Chilling.
Words of wisdom, as always, my friend. How you been doing?
Doing well. Doing really well.
That's awesome. Hey, tonight, man, I'm excited. We got a guest with us.
We do.
And
a very good friend of mine.
That's probably a short list, but that's cool.
It is a short list. He made the list. He probably doesn't much care for that, but hey, he made it.
Congratulations for making it. Tonight, we have Dr. Sherman Lee. He is a psychology professor with Christopher Newport University in Newport News, Virginia. Go Captains! Class of 93. Sorry.
Wow.
I know. Took it right
down. Good thing there was no video on that. That
I know.
Was
we're
crazy.
We're going to get a cease and desist order. I know it. So, welcome to the show tonight, Dr. Lee.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Jared's talked a lot about you, good and bad, and that's okay. But I'm super excited because when Jared was telling me about you, and you and I have had a bit of talk. Most recently, you've helped develop a scale to measure COVID grief, which is a really big thing with pandemic. I'm really excited to hear some about that. And Jared's got your book, Living with Grief Since COVID-19. And that is, Jared's got, we don't have a video. He's showing it to me. But yeah. We're going to be talking some about that and just kind of digging in some deep questions. You do some jujitsu with Jared, and have you made him tap out yet?
It's like, been a while.
He's like, it stays on the mat. I can't talk about it.
First thing about Fight Club is you don't talk.
You don't about talk about Fight Club. I just broke the first rule. I'm gonna get tapped.
He's
out
been later. Known to use the spider guard really well. He can do a cross collar choke, but I won't tell. We won't say who taught you that, Sherman. So, you know.
Well, welcome aboard and welcome to this crazy bus ride that we've got. Or we are the coach squad. You know, as always, we love having guests on here. And for anybody who's got questions for us, please make sure you hit us up on Instagram at We Are the Coach Squad, and also send us emails at wearethecoachsquad@gmail.com. So, Dr. Lee, tell us a little bit how did you get to where you are now? Give us a little backstory on who's the doctor.
Wow. That's a tough one. I don't know how far we want to go back, but I guess we can start in Virginia. I started at Christopher Newport in 2005. And so I've been teaching there as a professor in psychology and been interested in emotions. That's an area, and personality. So a lot of the topics that you guys talk about in your podcast, for which I'm a big fan, that's why I was very happy to get on the show and be part of that mix, hopefully. More recently, a lot of attention came about because of some work I did with COVID in terms of psychological reactions to the pandemic, like coronavirus anxiety. That was the first thing I studied back in March. And then more recently, looking more at the grief from people who have lost a loved one to COVID-19. So that's where most of the hype has come from lately.
What? So Sherman, if you give a little bit of back... just a little bit of backstory on why did you choose to go down that route? You and I've talked about it and, you know, we've discussed it. Why did you choose to focus so much on the COVID?
Well, in the beginning, it's an interesting story too, because the year before I was working on, I've been very moved by the victims of mass shootings. And I remember when a mass shooting would occur. It's crazy to think about us not talking about it, but if you go back 2 or 3 years, that was one of the main topics, right? Some kind of mass shooting incident. And I wanted to develop a way of identifying people who are having anxiety about that issue, for which most of us have, but I wanted to find people who are having it to the point for which it was making life unbearable, right? The level of anxiety that was what we call clinical level. And so I started that work, and then I didn't get to finish it when COVID came around. And I felt like in January, when I started to hear about this and I started to really try to finish my work, I was like, I can't believe all of this work that I've been working on is to nothing. It felt like it was going to nothing. And then something clicked in me in February, particularly one of our buddies at Jiu-Jitsu started to help people because he's a nurse, a Navy SEAL in his former life. But he's a person who took charge and does things to help people in the way he can. And I have a very limited skill set. And the one way I thought I could help was really take what I learned about mass shooting anxiety and about how to create an instrument to do this, and adopted those methodologies to look at people who would be afraid of this virus. And mind you, this is in February, before they've been really, really talked about it in the U.S. Now, I'm talking about it in Asia and a lot of other places, but in the U.S., it really wasn't. Our buddy and watching other people get involved in the ways they can to help, I jumped aboard that opportunity. And so I developed an instrument that's used to this day, very popular, to help identify people who are really having considerable fear and anxiety for the coronavirus.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, that's, and it's such a deep, you know, deep subject and affects so many different people, for you to be able to go into that and just, I mean, go from the shooting into COVID. It's, you know, I mean, that's to me, I don't know if I could handle that on a day-to-day basis, working with that and researching it. Just, I feel like I would go into an amount of depression, honestly, just doing it. But it seems like you're finding a way to help people with it, which is incredible. And, you know, when Jared and I were talking about having you on, with the things that we work with high school kids and being coaches, you know, one of the reasons we started the podcast was to help other coaches, because there's so much we don't know as coaches when they go in there. Is, you know, we take a certification about X's and O's, how to run a play, how to run a practice. You do a positive coaching alliance to keep kids pumped up. And you do something on, I just went blank on the other one. Parental abuse. But they don't talk to you about kids and really helping with emotions and personality. And you talk about the grief with COVID. And I mean, I just really, when we went in this, we want to help coaches. And it's turned into, we've helped coaches, and we take our personal life with our leadership positions. And we dig into that too with work. And I mean, it just we start layering in like onion, kind of getting in and digging in some different things. And we don't even know what we're doing half the time. But I think that's because we're honest about it, and we're trying to find answers to help other people too. And, you know, I worry about our players. I worry about a lot of the high school players, even younger players coming through COVID and getting back onto the fields now, really their emotions and how to handle it. And, you know, we've been put in positions, we've talked about on podcasts before as coaches, we've become surrogate fathers. You know, people look to us, we've become a big brother, an uncle, whatever that is, somebody. And it's there's a lot of pressure. And, you know, sometimes I don't know if we've done said the right things. We hope so. We try to look at their own kid. What could we do for them? And so that's why having you on tonight, it's awesome. Just kind of digging into that and coming out of COVID and not coming out. I don't even know if that's the right term to say, but
I don't know if we're ever going to get out of it. You know, Sherman, that friend of ours that you're talking about that kind of set he set a good example for a lot of us, especially in the people that know him. You know, he jumped right in, went right up to Harlem, worked there. And I would reach out to him a couple times a week just to check in, see how he was doing. And at the same time, I think I was checking to see how I was doing. You know, you don't to us, it wasn't real, right, Sherman? It's where we live. We live in a semi-populated areas, but not like in those big cities or big around the world. And so we don't really see that the effects in my personal world. We've got you and I both have a really good friend that's dealt with it recently. And so it's not, I'm not going to say it's not real, but it's not real, right? We're not living with it day to day, looking at it and stuff. And, you know, like Jimmy was saying, is it's when we start to bring these kids together, or the guys at the gym, right? We start bringing everybody together and start discussing this stuff. It makes it real when you actually run across somebody that has come through it. So when you're approached with it, you're a professor at college. Have you dealt with it with students?
Oh, definite. At Christopher Newport, we've, since the fall, instituted a hybrid model. So you've had students who were coming in, social distancing, so we're in these big halls. Like, I'm on a stage, so people can be separated. And we've broken up, and we have a lot of students who would stream in at the same time. So, you know, I'm doing a juggling act with a mask and a face shield, and dealing with their concerns and issues. And again, even the concerns and issues of the faculty. You know, the one thing about faculty you'll notice is occupations, you pretty much do until you're done. Because it's not hard on the body, right? It's one that you season better in time, right? You could season yourself. And so I was actually more concerned with some of my old, how they would deal with those environments being susceptible and a lot of them health concerns. So yes, that there was concern all around, from the students to faculty. I don't even know what was I supposed to answer on that?
Well, no, you did. And I wanted to bring something up that's in this book, that you've authored a section of it. And I highlighted this here because it was really, when I see numbers to things, it starts to make it a little bit more real. It says 94% of the world's students experience school closures, making it the largest disruption of education system in history. So this is affected, and it affects Jimmy and I because we coach these school-aged kids. And I don't think, until I read that, I didn't realize how big of an effect it was, or it is.
And Jimmy talked about this earlier, about how the team players, even though you guys didn't win, had a sense of a team identity spirit. And that's an important thing, element that educators, coaches, we all give kids, particularly in high school. And, you know, when the schools were closed, education not only slowed to stop, a lot of their identity, their support. A lot of people also don't realize, for a lot of people, this country and in the world, school is also a place for people to eat. It's also one of the fun resources to get away from violence or domestic abuse. Right? Schools, teachers, coaches are havens in our society. So it wasn't just educational impact, which is important, but again, the work that you guys do is integral and their development and safety. So yeah, that statistic is definitely one to think about, but also to think about what schools mean for society. It's beyond just the books.
I didn't really think about that when you just talked about the different levels of what schools, you know, of course you think education, and I've got three kids at home who are going through school, and I've seen different struggles virtually that where in person would make a huge difference. But when you start talking about the lunch, getting away from abuse, the safety aspects of it, I mean, maybe I'm naive. That's not a level that I was looking at, I guess, because on my own personal thing, I was like, well, the kid's an idiot. It's going to help them with their education because they're not struggling with the lunch, the abuse, or the safety in my household. But thinking about that doesn't mean that there's somebody else who's not. And it goes back to, you know, us when we're coaching guys or the high school boys, is that even though we think things are good in our house, we're dealing with multiple families, mm-hmm. that there's things there, there's layers there that when they come to that lacrosse field, that's a haven for them also, to get away from those things. And I guess that's when we're looked at as coaches and other coaches, whether it be high school boys, high school girls, or even at the youth levels, really that haven for them to be able to get away or get into something consistent or safe for them. That's pretty deep. I didn't go into that. I mean, that's,
I told you, dude, he's PhD for a reason. You go deep.
That's good. I mean, I love it. That's, I think Jared and I, we talked about one time, is like, you know, why do we do this? And when somebody comes to us and says, hey, coach, it really means a lot. It's a deep meaning, you know, because we've touched them in a way. They don't say, hey, Jimmy, hey, Jared. It's hey, coach. And maybe they don't remember our names. And so they just know us as coach, and that's fine too. But the ones who do know our names and just say coach, I think that's when you start to peel away that onion and get down into the safety part, all those things. It does really touch kids. So it's a pretty big deal.
You guys talked about it in your last one of your last episodes. Two things when I was listening came up. You know, you talked about that coach in your head for you folks, right? When that voice that gives you direction, and I think that's very telling about what is your role, which is in these young people's lives, and it to provide the guidance and the support of not be getting at other areas. And again, we talked this earlier, but you know, for a 16-year-old, the focus is really on developing who they are. They're in the beginning stages of it, and coaches are integral for them to form a sense of who they are. And you can make it or you can break
it. Oh, Sherman, I think we just kind of lost you there for a second.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's all right. You're good.
Okay. So, I think when you, another thing you guys brought up last time was kind of like, talking about finding your purpose or why you do what you do. You guys were kind of on this existential reflection, remember?
Yeah.
and I thought I was going to listen to coaching and not psychology.
But hey, did you learn about eating a shit sandwich in the last episode, possibly? So I'm just saying.
That's his favorite thing. God for he loves it.
But, you know, this is the thing, and I'm glad you guys were talking about it, because one thing is to focus on the developmental task of a high schooler, what their focus is on. But, you know, when you're coaches, people are in their 40s, 60s, you know, our task is a little bit different. You see, I'm happy you guys speak, because when you guys talk about it, you find meaning in helping grow the next generation. And that is our developmental task. And if you're doing this as a 50-year-old, 60-year-old, you'll find a deep sense of satisfaction. That's when you know you're going through this phase, just like the kids that you're talking to, when they know they're part of a team, they feel like they're good with who they are, you're doing your job. Similarly, for coaches, our task at this age is, are we doing a good job for the future? And when you're talking about growing these kids, trying to find answers, I see it as a very positive sign that you guys are hitting your people of this age. And you'll see people who are lost with this. That's why we talk about midlife crisis. You'll see older people start being, I don't want to use the word selfish, but more self-centered, right? They feel like too many people have taken from them. And really, that's what we are. I mean, I'm not, I tell my students this all the time. I'm rarely Sherman. I'm usually, which means you're calling me for something Dr. Lee can do for you. I'm Aubrey's dad. I'm Anissa's dad, right? I'm a vehicle of giving things. But that's something that developmentally, if I'm being healthy psychologically, I have to understand that is where I sit now in our society. I am the giver. This is the prime of our lives to be coaches, to give to the next generation. And so, you know, going back to finding your purpose and writing it down, I think one of the things is satisfied with that as our end goal. And rarely did I ever hear you guys ever talk about, like, we have to win and you guys are counting points. You know, you guys really hit the other issues about helping these kids get to another level emotionally, psychologically. So I applaud you guys for really, you know, being targeted at those tasks.
Well, I care about winning.
I have to balance it. No, you know, I tell you, we do like to win, but we both believe that if we build a foundation with these kids and that it's positive, they're growing, they're learning all the time, the wins are going to happen. You know, and now talent can beat out all that. I mean, of course, sometimes you're going to run into a buzzsaw of a team, but I think that we do try to develop the kids for the long term and really do that. It's, you know, it's, I go back to my dad coached me in soccer way back in sixth grade. He had grew up in the country as a baseball player, didn't know a single thing about soccer, went to the library and had to read books to learn it. And then he was in a leadership position at work. So coaching, he had never coached before that, but to transition into coaching was a pretty daunting task for him. But he believed in developing good young men on the soccer team. And that was way back in sixth grade. And we ended up winning. Now, it's way back then. And, you know, sixth grade.
They kicked rocks.
We did. Square barefooted. Rocks. Barefooted. But we won a lot. But it was, he built a foundation of the team, you know, learning, believing. And a lot of that's where I get mine from, is back from my dad really kind of teaching those same things. And then I came up, I've been blessed to have some good coaching and through different levels. And those coaches, I think pretty much I think they were good because I was attracted to some of those same things that my dad started. And Jared and I actually had a conversation today about coaching. And it got into a quandary of, like, with young players, travel teams typically have good coaches. You're paying for that. You're paying for good coaching. They're going to – a skill set they're going to teach you to try to get to the next level.
And there's a level of exposure that's different.
Level exposure. If you want to go to college, you're playing on travel team. The high school teams a lot of times aren't very good. And it's – a lot of that – it can come – Jared says a lot of that comes from top down. The coaching isn't good, or – They're looking just for the win and the loss. They're not trying to develop the players the same way. And so it really, we are getting into this whole struggle about players getting exposure. Do they play for the high school that the team's no good? Or do they go to the travel team? I mean, we started digging into some stuff about helping kids get some college exposure, because we've got kids who are going to go to college and play sports. You know, we always try to help. We try to take that on. But, I mean, we started digging all into that about really building foundation and setting some stuff up. So
the one – Sherman, one thing I could ask you about is kind of on this – the psychological side of people, wins versus losses versus expectation. I think there's three different – there's probably more levels than that. Some kids and some parents – their expectation is their kid goes out and has fun, gets the trophy and the t-shirt, and life's fantastic. But then you have the kids that the expectation is winning, and you've got the parent, you've got the dad in the crowd that I'm not going to name names, but maybe me, that gets so frustrated when he recognizes that there's so much talent there, but I don't feel that the coach is tapping into it. Like Jimmy and I would, if we were running the team. So you start to question it. So it's expectations versus wins, losses, and I don't know, winning. How does that psychological play into that psychology play into society from your point of view?
Well, I don't think it's an either or. I definitely think, you know, there's a place for playing for fun. You know, everyone gets a ribbon. There's a place for someone winning and everyone losing. There's a place for, because that's what life is. You see, I don't think each one of those approaches is necessarily inherently good or bad. And I think that's the problem. I think we often think we have to make a choice, right? Am I just going to be nice and make you feel good, or am I going to grind you and make you win? You know, you can do both, because that's what life is. Sometimes you do have to grind and just win and suck it up. And sometimes, you know, the game is not that important right now. It's not. And what's probably more important right now is having a good time. So, you know, I think if we can model all of those sides, again, as a coach, you can show them that life is filled with all of those things. It allows them to have those tools. Because all of you have seen people on both ends of those spectrum. People who cannot take anything serious because of the potential fears of failure, right? So then everything's a game and nothing's taken serious. Everyone gets a, right? That's not, because that person's really just avoiding a tough spot, right? Trying to make it nice. At the same time, we also know people who are just so driven to win, to the expense that after they win, who's going to celebrate with them? Who wants to be around them, right? I mean, holding the trophy is going to be pretty lonely after an hour, you know, just looking at the trophy yourself, right?
Yeah. So, I'm a winner.
Yeah. So, you know, Sherman, it's funny. Jiu-jitsu, I think, shows a lot of that, right? You can go in. There's a saying, it kind of bothers me, is some days you're the hammer, other days you're the nail. You learn how to deal with those ups and those downs differently, because it's one-on-one. It's not, you know, 11 on 11 or 12 on 12. It is just a personal thing that you got to deal with. And a lot of times there's that long drive home that you got to deal with, right? Both the good days, because you want to come home and tell somebody that probably really doesn't care. And then you have the nights that you got to get home because you guys couldn't stand what happened. So one question, and Jimmy, if you're, correct me if I'm wrong, that we're kind of looking at too is, so when we go out on the field in the next 3 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We start our team. We get out there. Some of the things, maybe it goes back to this chart that you developed. What can us as coaches look for? What are some of those key identifiers that maybe we could look at that might help us identify that some kids are struggling with COVID, and I want to call it COVID issues, because I think COVID is related into so many other issues now, but it's kind of the forefront and it's triggering other things based on the data that I'm reading from you. You know, it helps kick off those other issues. But what is something that we can look for? What are those identifiers that we can look at?
Well, I think the first one is having that rapport with students, so you know who they are, right? And like adults, if they're not acting like themselves, you don't have to be a psychologist to know something's going on. What is that something, right? Are they shutting down if they're used to be, you know, being talkative? They're being more irritable? Are they feeling more overwhelmed than they typically are? This has to do with your rapport, right? With these students, knowing who they are on good days and bad, And again, when you see that they're not acting within the parameters you're used to, I think those are good red flags. I don't know, Jimmy, if you're going to talk about your situation, someone with COVID that we were talking about. But again, I don't think you have to necessarily be a psychologist to really know when something's wrong with someone that you have invested some time with and are able to get.
No, hold on a second, Sherman. We lost you again.
There it is.
Right. There you go. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, it's, you know, you mentioned it a little. It's, we had talked prior. I had shared a situation. And I, when you're talking about looking for the signals or just checking in on people, I think, one, the checking in on people is huge. In one of our podcasts, I ended with making sure you reach out to people, check in on them. Recently, I'll share the story is, so recently I had somebody I work with and I do, you know, business consulting with them. And I went in to check on them, a successful person. And I'll be 52 this year and he's 72 and sat down in the office. And I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And he sat down and this man has always been pretty strong, just a good leader, a good leader. Just his presence, the way he talks to people, the way he does things. And he sat down in a chair, leaned back, and said, "Man, I'm tired." And I said, "You had a," and this was on Friday. And I said, "Oh, you've had a long week. You've been working hard, man." I said, "Just killing it. Great job." Thinking that. He said, "No, I'm tired." And he took his glasses off, and I was, something was different. Something was off. And he reached into his chest pocket and he pulls out a folded up notebook paper. And he hands it to me. And there's a list of names, about a dozen. And he says, "You see those names?" And I was like, "Yes, sir." He said, "Those are all my friends that have died this past year." And I was like, "Oh." And he said, "All COVID related, every single one of them." And he started going down the list of different things where they contracted COVID and then they had an underlying health issue that was exposed and things spiraled. So he said, "I'm tired. I just added another name to that list today." And I'm sitting there and I'm used to having this relationship with him that is, you know, back and forth, tease each other a little bit. We talk business. I really respect him. He's a, like I said, he's a really good leader. Other people respect him. We have a great relationship and we talk about different things. And just, I think the check-in, and when I said, "How are you doing?" I literally meant, "Hey, how are you doing?" It was end of the week, you know, I figured he's tired. But when he handed me this piece of paper, and I'd mentioned to you, I feel like we get in our silos where things, we almost pretend like things don't affect us or there's things around me that aren't going to affect me. And we're talking about kids a lot, you know, beginning here. This is a 72-year-old male that handed me a piece of paper with a dozen names on of friends that have died this past year. And I struggled as another leader just on how to help him. And we talked and just kind of went through some different things. And I was really worried about him. I actually called somebody else who knows him after our conversation to have them reach out to him also, just to check in. I was worried. And it's where I think that as a coach, I worry about the young people that we coach. But also just I worry about people in general that – there are things like that, that caught me. So it was a punch in the face when he handed me that list of names. And I don't know, you know, this is things is I'm sure there's other people who are dealing with that. You know, how do we work through something like that? That's that, like I said, my silo was broken down and it punched me right in the face. And just, it really was impactful to me. And it definitely was, he had a list a list of names that he carries in his one. It's almost like his, I don't want to say memorial. It's sure. What's that?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's his remembrance. He writes them down. He keeps them in his chest pocket. And I felt awful. I mean, he keeps it because he thinks he's going to keep adding to it.
Well, probably. And again, if you think about the context of how we had to deal with the rituals of funerals and remembrances, we've had to change those. A lot of individuals didn't get a proper funeral or kind of remembrance, right? Because of the conditions. So in a way, he may be adding to it, but also preserving them because there was no, maybe, again, I don't know, for him to have the goodbyes that he wanted, the respect he wanted to show because of the conditions of COVID and him being in his 70s is probably dangerous, even if he had the opportunity to gather do some kind of last rites with the families. So I think it's very understandable. And it's sad because, like, you were surprised that the sacred piece of paper that he's adding to, you know, had he not said anything, you know, he's had that in his pocket and he carries that around with him. And that's the one area for which I know it sounds sad, but it's the one area that I'm trying to bring attention to because he's represents a lot of people. You're talking about more than 500,000 people in the United States alone and that have died within 1 year of COVID and are not able to wrap their heads around it, memorialize them, to grieve properly, right? And you gave them an opportunity, which I think it was wonderful, personality that he's able to feel comfortable to share that with you. And the fact that he said he's tired is actually one of the symptoms in one of my screeners we find with people who are grieving intensively of COVID-19 grief. You know, you're overwhelmed. You're so overwhelmed with the loss. And so I feel for him.
Yeah, he is a wonderful man. And I've had more check-in with him since then about it. Just we didn't necessarily talk about that, but just the check-in, just to see how he's doing from there. I really believe in that. I'll tell you that one day at work we talked about what are you doing differently now since COVID, and you know people were like, "Oh, I do more virtual calls." You know, I'm more readily available because of the computer. And, you know, just like us tonight talking on the computer, you know, doing a virtual interview, we have that opportunity to do that, which is great. But somebody said, as we're kind of going, somebody says, you know what? I've started checking in on my friends and family more. And they said, this has been something. And I was like, bam. You know, those are the things that I think that, you know, a lot of people have talked about it, but people, have they actually done it? And, you know, as coaches with the young guys, we have stayed active with them and doing different things. And that's where I think we could challenge ourselves. Could we do more? Because we know, and we get irritated with other coaches because, like, why wouldn't you keep in contact with your players? Why wouldn't you check in? Why wouldn't you do those things? What's it take? And it really irritates me is that people don't do that with everything that's going on. But I think that's, I mentioned, you know, kind of getting your silo is unless it's happening to you, you might not realize it. Unless somebody says something that doesn't, you know, resonate, you know, you're probably going to, but it's really impactful. I did appreciate that he shared it with me. That was pretty special. I think that you're right. He trusted me. Jared and I talk a lot about trust. That was a pretty big thing, but I just, I worry about the kids as they're coming out and starting to play the sports, that there's going to be some underlying things with grief or depression. They already go through it. I mean, 16 to 18 sucks. I mean,
it does.
Oh my, I used to have sweat pits. Like, it didn't matter what deodorant I put on. I couldn't stop sweating. I had acne. I had a big old white boy afro. I know. Imagine that. But it sucked. I know. I was actually, we were on video the other night. We were working, and I looked, and I saw a video of myself, and you could see the shine of my back of my head where my hair's thinned out. Those were the days, the white boy afro. But I did have one.
The flow.
I did. Oh,
Lord have mercy.
BG, staying alive. I'd be walking. Yeah.
Bell bottoms. I'm sure
No. I did not have bell bottoms. I did have some plaid pants at some point, but no. But no bell bottoms. There is a picture of
you
me.
You did have a pair, or you still have a pair?
They wouldn't fit my foot, probably. You see, Jared takes something that was so personal and serious, and he just completely screwed me over.
It was good. But that's what I got to do. I got to bring everybody back to reality because we play to win the game.
Hey,
all joking aside, Sherman, you know, and that story that Jimmy just shared, I think that there are more people out there with those names in their pockets than we know. To me, one of the really bad things about the way COVID has hit is we can't, like you said, we're not grieving like we normally do. There is really no way for closure. And I look at the chart that you brought, that you developed. I don't remember if it's you that developed it or you and one of your colleagues. It's the PGS chart. I want you to talk about that a little bit, because I really think if we understood and we had those questions going on in our minds, I think that might help us recognize some issues that maybe people are having.
Yeah. So we developed Robert Niemeyer. He's a well-known psychologist. He's since retired, but he's still active in the field. And he runs an Institute on Grief out in Oregon. He's also the editor of a journal called Death Studies, so that's an area that I work in. When November came around and we realized that no one pitched in at that end, because I was so focused on coronavirus anxiety because there was so much hype around it, and I was managing the websites and helping all these researchers study it, and, you know, I just assumed someone was going to do this because obvious it was going to be needed. November came, no one did. Okay, let's do it, let's develop it. And fancy talk aside, we found five symptoms that were really telling for us of people were beyond the pain. They're affecting their ability to work, their ability to take care of their home, and functional impairment, right? Your ability to live your life normally. Found these five symptoms that were pretty unique to COVID, and we developed an instrument so that a mental health provider could use that screen, and identify people who may have those symptoms. Some of those symptoms are, as you mentioned, Jimmy, apathy is one, being so overwhelmed and being apathetic. Ideas about wanting to die, we call it suicidal ideation, wishing that they were dead as well, with the deceased. Feeling of meaninglessness, right? You just can't find your purpose, right? And again, if you think about a lot of these individuals are older, there's houses they're left without. This person that's been on the earth 50, 60 years, right? And to watch them die and die in this way, very tragic, very traumatic. And so that screen was just designed to try to be really quick and help to identify some people who may need help, but definitely not a replacement for seeing a health professional who can do evaluation. My goal in this was to give screeners, which like in the physical assessment of like COVID, you go in there, you get swabbed, right? And in an hour or maybe 3 hours, you'll get feedback. It's not 100%, but it's supposed to be quick, right? Similarly, in psychology, we have the same mentality. Sometimes we need to be able to address something quickly because we won't have that time. And that's where I come in. And hopefully, conversation where individuals may have to seek out some support and get further, you know, more deeper evaluations.
I think that's huge, is that, you know, being able to put that scale in place to really help understand or help to diagnose people with the different things that are going on, only is going to be able to help them when they seek that professional help. You know, because I think there's a lot of times people don't realize it. And a lot of times they hide it. They think it's not, you know, I'm not tough. So I think men in particular, we struggle with it, is that we're not tough if we say we have a mental issue going on, or I feel depressed or anything like that. And so we don't ask for help. We don't seek help. And I think it's also men on the same thing struggle with asking other men, how are you doing? And seeing if they can help them, or just doing that check-in with them. I think women do that much better than men. It's, you know.
Well, a lot of it goes back to what we talked about before, is trust. You know, we build a lot of trust with our players. We try to, anyways. And I think we do a pretty good job at that. And, you know, the relationship you have with another person is based a lot on just, do you trust that person or not? And that's, I think that's a huge part to help with me, you know, hopefully help kids when they come out. And really, we've had many conversations with parents too. I mean, it's funny, we talk about the kids, but the two of us, we've both had conversations with the parents, you know, trying to cope with their kid either not playing, you know, talking about minutes and stuff, or, you know, just trying to help with, it's a little bit different when coach asks you how you're doing in school than it is with mom. So
it comes different.
So,
well, Sherman, we've peppered you with some different things, and we've tried to expand on our knowledge of psychology. Is there anything that the coaches can help you with?
No, definitely. So how do you think you guys can, based on a lot of things we talked about and some insights that, you know, maybe about thinking about school is not just books, but a place for someone to eat, a place for someone to get away from violence, right?
Right.
Autism and things like. After we had that conversation, how then do you think you guys are going to be able to move into your coaching situation? Are you guys going to change anything? Are you going to do anything different?
We do a lot of, just when we talk to the guys at practice, we'll talk to them, not always about X's and O's, just trying to make sure we check in on them, see how they're doing. I think probably expand that a little bit. I think as coaches, you can always get caught up with talking to the star player. It's, you know, you talk to them at probably a little differently than you talk to maybe a newer player. Newer player worried about developing them and starting that relationship. I think with the star player, the better player, experienced player, I think building on that, I want to make sure I do that. And then with the newer ones coming in, making sure that I'm working to build the relationship from the get-go. And it's not about just developing their skill, but developing that relationship with them. I think that I could do probably a better job with that right off the bat.
The one thing that jumped to my mind is letting the kids know that we're there for an outlet. So it's funny because Jimmy and I will approach the kids differently, and he's right. You usually talk to the seasoned player different than you talk about the new kid. Talk to the new kid. One thing that I want the kids to understand is that for that hour and a half we're at practice, 2 hours of practice, and then maybe the 2 hours, 2.5 hours of the game time, I want them to understand that that's their time. I used to think about that, and I don't think I've expressed it enough. Those are times that I want them to be able just to. That's time when you're between the lines, you don't have to think about the crap that's going on the outside, right? I want them to feel comfortable enough that they can come and be themselves and to leave it there. I talked to a kid the other night at jiu-jitsu. He really opened up to some of the things that he's seen in his life and experienced. And I really focused on him, told him to bring it and leave it. Leave it at the edge of the mat, come in and train. And then as you walk out, forget that it was there and try and find some sort of positiveness out of the crap that's going on. So a takeaway, you ask Sherman, for me, a takeaway is to be maybe a little more mindful of some of that stuff that's going on and try and be that outlet where they're able to not have to worry about it, hopefully. And then run the crap out of them. Let them know that winning is everything. And no, I just kidding. Hey, you know, I'm joking around with that. But, you know, that's one thing, too, is that when, maybe that's a way we can take their mind off it is by giving them a sense of belonging to the team. Yeah. Like we did in the fall. We've harped on the fall.
Yeah.
It was a really, really special time. These kids were able to, and us, I mean, I can talk more about us and the kids, just seeing the kids. We were able to forget all of the crap that was going on when we stepped out on a field. So I don't know if that means anything to you, Sherman, if that answered your question or not.
No, it does. Because, again, going back to your previous podcast, you know, to be able to execute something that you do is you got to know your purpose, right? And more concrete with what it is you want to do. And that way you can evaluate. You know, what is my role as a coach, and what is my role as a coach during this pandemic? And so, you know, I was trying to pick your minds on that issue. I don't necessarily think there's a right or wrong with it, but it's definitely an issue that we're all going to deal with, you're dealing with. And again, kind of following your lead on trying to make it more concrete and make it more explicit. As something that we could do to grow. That's why I wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, we'll have to probably have you back on like after our season goes through. That way we can talk to you about how it progresses and how the boys are, you know, emotionally, you know, all the things. What they bring out, you know, being able to get out and run around and stuff like that. We share it with you and be a nice thing to see.
Yeah. Well, I'm not paying you for any.
He's like, by the hour. By the hour.
Sherman, you are one of the, you know, we've trained a lot, got to know each other real well. I really appreciate you coming on. I was excited for you to meet Jimmy. I'm hoping that our listeners are excited to listen to you. You're a good dude. And I really appreciate the person you've been in my life. And hopefully, you know, Coach Johnson and I can be that type of person to our players. And hopefully our listeners want to be that type of person to their players as well. And just the people to come in contact with.
Yeah, it's been awesome talking with you tonight. I really appreciate it. And, you know, love the stuff that you're digging into with COVID and just – I mean, it's opened up my eyes a lot. The conversation tonight was great. I hope it helps some other people. Sometimes just having the conversation, getting it out there. You start off at the beginning where, you know, talking about mass shootings and people haven't talked about it, you know, COVID, and we moved in the conversation. Is that sometimes you got to have the conversation to understand it. And I think that's what we're doing here is having conversation and at the same time enjoying being around each other. I enjoyed talking to you more than usually Jared, but but it,
a lot of trust in that.
I had a lot of trust there, but no, it's been great. I appreciate you hopping on with us tonight.
Well, thank you. And it was again, you know, Jared and I have been buddies and we share mat time together, and he's definitely been one of my best And again, he joked a little bit about the brown belt, but it was for me that he received his black belt because he is my coach. He's always been my coach. Regardless, I have a lot of respect for him. And again, your podcast, both of you guys do such a great job of really doing psychology and in a very meaningful way. And so I really do appreciate that you guys let me in your mix. And it was a big honor. So thank you.
Well, you're now part of the coach squad too. And for our listeners, you know, once again, hit us up. We are the Coach Squad on Instagram. We are the Coach Squad at gmail.com. Tonight you heard Dr. Sherman Lee, psychology professor at Christopher Newport University. Once again, go Captains! And I am going to get a cease and desist. But all right.
Wow.
I'm going to end it on that. So for our listeners, have a great night as always. Hey, check in on your friends. Be nice to each other. Have a great night.